This is Doug Kay from the Conversations Network, and today it's my pleasure to bring you another edition of Tech Nation with Dr. Moira Gunn. SpokenWord.org is our new site with over 175,000 free audiobooks, lectures, speeches, podcasts, and more in both audio and video formats. And it's a great front end for iTunes to manage all of your podcast subscriptions. Come by and take a look at SpokenWord.org. Our audio files are delivered by Limelight Networks, the high-performance content delivery network for digital media. You can get IT Conversations updates on Twitter. Just follow the name IT Conversations. And now, here's the host of Tech Nation, Dr. Moira Gunn.
From San Francisco, I'm Moira Gunn, and this is Tech Nation. Today on Tech Nation, I'll speak with UCLA psychiatrist Dr. Judith Orloff about emotional freedom from psychology to biology.
Hello, I'm Jason Ponton, the editor-in-chief of Technology Review, MIT's magazine that focuses on the future of technology, with cutting-edge tech news every day on the web at technologyreview.com.
In Judith Orloff's latest book, she focuses on seven emotions: fear, frustration, loneliness, anxiety, depression, jealousy, and anger. I asked her, why these emotions?
Well, in emotional freedom, I wanted to focus on the main emotions that people go through, because as a psychiatrist, I was trained at UCLA during my psychiatric residency, and also at USC for my medical school, and I was trained to medicate emotions. I was trained that there
Isn't that what one does in society?
Well, I was trained that there was a biological correlate to emotions. If you're depressed, especially major depressions, you treat it with antidepressants. And so I wanted to present in emotional freedom different options to deal with your emotions that go beyond simply the biological, although the biological plays an important role.
Now, we have no official way as lay people to name an emotion we're feeling. In fact, some of us grew up in families where particular emotions, they didn't exist whether you were feeling them or not. So naming them had no point at all. Now, some of my questions are pointed in that direction, because in the part of the book where you take each emotion and really go into it, you talk about all the components that go into it. Here's the biological response. Here's what you sort of feel. Here's the indicator, if you will, that you're experiencing this emotion. That's kind of a big surprise for someone like me reading this book.
It is. I really bring all sensibilities to the emotions, my traditional psychiatric standpoint, and also my reverence for energy and for intuition and for psychology, the behavior. You know, where do we have the acts that we do? Where does our behavior come from? You know, all of that fascinates me. And so I wanted to incorporate that into each emotion so that people can get used to naming them, but also having strategies to deal with them. Because with my patients, what I've seen is where they get into trouble is that they don't have the strategies, where you get depressed or you get anxious or you get afraid, and it just, you go under with it. And so emotional freedom is about learning how to own the moment and not react just when your buttons are pushed, and not get snowed under by emotions, but be able to have strategies to really triumph over the difficult ones.
Well, each of these sections, for instance, there's one section saying train your brain, change your biology. So you've explained the biology of the emotion.
Yes.
And then you can actually overcome it, biologically speaking.
Absolutely, because part of emotional freedom is learning how to harness your biology, yourself. And how you do that is that you have to tone down the fight or flight response that happens during stress, which means you have a stress response, the cortisol rushes through your system, the adrenaline rushes through your system, your heartbeat races, your blood pressure goes up, your immunity goes down, you have, you know, increased pressure on your system. And so you need to learn on your own how to bring that down and create the relaxation response so that those beautiful endorphins, the natural painkillers, are flooding through your body. And so you need to learn how to do that. And you could do that through limiting negative stimulation coming in, for instance, having news fasts instead of being constantly bombarded by the doom and gloom that's on the outside. by not being around emotional vampires. These are people I talk about in the book who drain your energy, who are very negative. In this climate, we need to be around positive, supportive people, particularly in the workplace, because if you have one emotional vampire there who's negative and bringing everyone else down, that can affect the morale.
Well, I'm glad you said that. When I read the term emotional vampire, I said, gee, I've got some names for you to submit for the Hall of Fame. I know these people, and I hadn't even read the chapter yet. So let's get to, you know, who they are. You list five. I'm sure there are more, but five general categories here: narcissist, victim, controller, criticizer, and splitter. Let's go through those and see where we might find them in our lives.
Yes, and there's a quiz with each type to determine if you're in a relationship with, let's say, a narcissist or a splitter. But a narcissist, let's start with that, because this is the most malignant type. The narcissist is the me type person where everything revolves around them, but they can be charming and bright and seductive. But if you don't go along with their plan, then they become cold, withholding, and punishing. And the thing with narcissists is that they don't have empathy for how you're feeling. And this is what most people miss. If you have a heart and if you have empathy, it's so hard to conceptualize that somebody else might not be capable of doing that. But narcissists are not. And so this prevents them from being able to love you. So it's very important, if you're dating a narcissist, to know that and do not fall in love with one.
Walk away,
as run as fast as you can. If you're involved with a narcissist, that's a different story, because then you've got to lower your expectations. Or if you have a boss that's, let's say, a narcissist, the only way to get your needs met is to frame it in terms of how it serves them.
Now, the next one is victim, being in a relationship with a victim.
Yes, a victim is somebody who's really entrenched in the poor me mentality, and everyone is against them. Their mother doesn't understand them. Their boss doesn't appreciate their work. The world is against them, and they will go on and on for hours about this. And this is particularly malignant in our workplace now, because everyone's trying to be positive, and we have to really set clear limits and boundaries with the victim and say to them, let's say you've had a hard day at work and you come home, and there's your friend who's the victim calling you. You must say to this person, instead of listening for 2 hours on the phone, you know, I love you, you're my friend, but I can only listen for 3 minutes if you don't want to get into solutions, because otherwise you're enabling a relationship, or you'll be running scared the next time they call, and you'll be screening your calls, and you don't want to live a life that way.
So the energy goes out again, the emotions go out again, but not toward you.
Yes, you get drained emotionally.
Okay, now we have the controller.
Yes, the controller is that person who knows what's best for you.
Oh, them. Get
yes.
Some Hall of Famers there.
Right. And they gain power by controlling every little thing. And the controller lacks a lot of spontaneity and fun. And so it's just important to know not to try and control a controller, because that technique never works. All right, you have to try more of a backdoor approach with the controller by clearly stating your needs, but not getting into a power struggle with them.
And then the criticizer.
Yeah, the criticizer is somebody who cuts you down and has a criticism for everything that you do. You're not going out with the right guy. You're not in a job that's successful enough. You're not cooking the chicken well enough. Whatever it is, they're criticizing what you do. And this can cut very deep. This is very painful, particularly with a family member. So it's important to be able to speak up with these criticizers and not give them too much rope, and say with the family member, let's say, you know, it's hurting my feelings when you're telling me I'm not taking good care of the kids because I'm working and I'm trying to balance so many things. So please don't say that.
And so these are also people that you didn't choose to be in your life, that you discovered, you found in your life, you were born into them, or perhaps married into them as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, some emotional vampires you can't get away from, and they're there at the family dinner table at the holiday time. I used to have an aunt who I would meet at holiday dinners years ago, and she'd say to me, dear, are you married yet? Like, oh, no.
Great.
Yeah, great.
And what about the final one, splitter?
The splitter is the borderline personality. And this is the type who knows how to split people and turn one person against one another. When I was working at UCLA on the inpatient units, we were given courses on splitters to be aware of them so that they didn't turn one staff member against another. They just have a knack for this. It could be one family member that badmouths another one and then turns you against them and creates this feud. And splitters feel like nothing inside. They don't have a sense of identity. And so it's important not to take the side of a splitter. If you notice somebody is doing this in your family, you must gather everyone together and say, hey, this person is trying to, you know, make trouble here, and not buy into what a splitter says.
Well, it's funny. I've heard the term borderline personality disorder before, and I kind of look at the list or whatever. Just simply saying this is a splitter, to me, almost enables me to say, I see the pattern.
Yes.
And now I can do something about it. And I think that goes throughout the book. You're giving us everyday terms for the action of these emotional vampires in our lives.
Yes, exactly. And so you can take action and own the moment, because what happens is that most people are just reactive and they feel terrible when they have interactions with these people. And so you develop the plan, go through the parts of the book which include the strategies, so that when you identify, I have a splitter in my family, I'm going to use these strategies and I'm going to test them out so that this splitter can't get to me or wreak any kind of havoc in my life. So emotional freedom is about claiming your power back, you know, and saying, no matter who is doing what, I'm going to be the one to own the moment.
You're listening to Tech Nation. I'm Moira Gunn. My guest today is Dr. Judith Orloff, a psychiatrist. She's an assistant clinical professor at UCLA, and you may well know her from her popular books, including Positive Energy and Second Sight. Her latest, Emotional Freedom, Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life. Now, the last big section of the book has to do with the seven emotions we talked about earlier. And you take each one of them and you really go down and analyze them from biology, psychology, spirituality, and energy. Now, two of those are sciences.
Right.
Energy, okay, great. We can understand energy. Spirituality, that's a term a lot of people have a lot of definitions for. What do you mean by it?
Yeah, so my definition of spirituality, it can apply to a religion, or it can apply to a belief in something greater than yourself that's connected to love. Whatever it is, however people name it, it doesn't matter to me what the name is. But it's important because it helps you connect with a deep source of compassion and love. And so that whatever you're going through in life, you could remember that that's there. And that's part of the healing. And from a spiritual perspective, when you're going through depression or something like that, I frame it as the dark night of the soul and a dignified spiritual passage. The point is to learn how to find hope. And this is a stretching of our emotional and spiritual muscles. And it's a beautiful expansion of the heart. And every difficult emotion has a purpose. It's not just to torment us. So from a spiritual point of view, it's important to ask yourself, what can I learn from this emotion? How can it help my heart grow?
Well, one emotion that's rampant these days, in the days of economic meltdown, is fear. How do we know we're experiencing fear?
Yes, well, fear is the mother of all negative emotions. Every other emotion I talk about in the book comes from that. Jealousy, envy, anger, loneliness, all of it comes from fear. And so it's important to make a commitment to the best of your ability not to lead a fear-driven life, because if you are stuck in fear and it's very tempting to stay there, you won't be able to make good creative decisions in this very hard economic time. Now, I work with my patients on finding a quiet place inside to be able to listen to their inner wisdom, to see what kinds of creative solutions they could come up with for job issues, for the economy, you know, for all kinds of things where they have to stretch how to find the creative solutions. There was one woman I was working with who was so worried and was stuck in the worry, but I helped her find a calmer place in herself. And in that calm place, she had a flash of a newspaper that she never reads, but she went to the newspaper and she found a job there. So it was
there.
In the quiet place. So the point I'm trying to make in the book is that if you try and solve the problem from being entrenched in fear with all that fight or flight response rushing through your system and that cortisol and adrenaline, you're going to be hard pressed to make a good decision. And so in order to make really creative, wonderful decisions, you have to find a calm place. And there's a 3-minute meditation that I suggest in the book to periodically calm yourself, because stress is a lot like pain. You have to break the cycle. And once you do take a mini break from the stress and you find that quiet place, then you could go back to your life again. But if you have enormous stress without any break, that takes a huge toll on the mind, body, and spirit.
Now, let's talk about the emotion of jealousy. It's not one that gets a lot of play unless we see it play out along the this man is jealous of this woman or vice versa, and then they take some horrible action, physical action from there. That's what we read about online.
Crimes of passion.
Crimes of passion. But in fact, we see jealousy every day. We see it in families. We see it in the workplace where someone may be jealous of someone else's accomplishments. Let's talk about jealousy. How do you know just personally that you're feeling jealous?
Well, I'm defining jealousy and envy as two separate things.
Oh, okay.
And envy is when you want something that someone else has. And jealousy is when you're afraid something is going to be taken away from you.
Ah, okay. So it's two directions. Yeah.
Two directions of the same emotion. And so in the chapter on jealousy and envy, I've put them together. But I think it's important to make that distinction, because sometimes people can be dealing with jealousy but not envy. Or I've worked a lot with envy in myself, because I'd like want to clear that. And so I'm not really a jealous person, but I tend to get envious sometimes. So I've had that opportunity in my own life to work with that. And the antidote for jealousy and envy is self-esteem. It's feeling good about who you are and knowing that comparing yourself to somebody else is like apples and oranges. You are given exactly what you need in your life for your own growth. And, you know, I found myself, I was envious around a particular issue, and in terms of people getting on the bestseller list for the New York Times. It was very specific. And friends of mine would get on, and I couldn't be happy for them. And I didn't want to be that person.
Because you were just mad that it wasn't happening to you.
Yes, it wasn't happening to me. And so over the years, I've really had a chance to work with my own self-esteem to build that up. So I want to be the kind of person who could be happy for others. And what's so amazing about this book, Emotional Freedom, is I did get on the New York Times list this time. So it was a celebration.
That's good. It can be turned around.
Yes.
But then in terms of that's envious, because you're seeing they have something you want.
Yes.
But you weren't really jealous of them. You didn't really wish for them to not have it. Would that be if you were in jealousy?
No, I did wish for them not to have it.
Okay.
And jealousy is if you're afraid a woman's going to take away your mate.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Or someone's going to steal your job. That kind of thing, that you're afraid something is going to be taken away from you. And it's important to be able to set limits in terms of that. As I worked with one woman who worked for a magazine, and somebody stole her ideas. You know, stole her ideas, used them, and didn't give her credit. All right? And that, you know, it can make you very angry for something like that. But the first one was jealous of the other, and she stole the ideas. So, you know, jealousy is something to really work with in the self. But I want to emphasize compassion. As you're doing this work with emotional freedom, as you go through these things, if you're jealous, if you're envious, just notice with self-compassion, yes, we all have these emotions. And isn't it brave and fantastic that you can look at it mindfully with the intention of transforming it to something more positive? And that's the attitude of the book that I'd want people to come away with, not to beat themselves up. I have a test in the beginning of the book, Are You Emotionally Free? A 20-question test to find out where you stand now. And I think it's important to take that test. But, you know, a lot of people don't score very high on it.
Oh, dear.
No, but that's all right. You know, that's all right, because you will. And the change will happen. That's what's so inspirational and exciting about working with these emotions, is that you'll feel that freedom inside of yourself and the lightness of being that comes from lifting these difficult emotions.
Well, you do describe several different emotional types, like the intellect or the rock or the gusher. You know, let's go into that so people perhaps can, at least lightly in this interview, perhaps see themselves.
Yes, it's important to know what your emotional type is so that you know where you're coming from and how to balance it. And so I devoted a whole chapter to emotional types, and there are four main types and with quizzes to see who you identify with. But one is the intellectual. This is somebody who is a brilliant analyzer, loves to make lists, is a good debater, you know, very brilliant mind, loves to solve problems. That's the plus. On the minus side, this person might not be in touch with their body or their intuition, or be empathic if you're in a relationship with someone who's more emotional. And so what they do is they try and solve problems in any kind of crisis rather than empathizing with their mate saying, I know how you feel. And just a tip for all you intellectuals out there, just say, I know how you feel to your mate. It will go such a long way before you try and solve the problem. The second type was the emotional empath. And this is the emotional sponge, somebody who's very sensitive and open, and yet they tend to take on the anxiety and stress of the world in their own body and get exhausted. Now, it's a very sensitive type. This is my type, so I can really relate to it. But particularly during this time, empaths are getting demolished because of all the stress in the world. And you turn on the news and you hear it everywhere, and poor empaths are sponging it up. And what they need to learn is how not to sponge up emotions, how to come from a stronger internal place and not take on the angst of the world. That's the challenge of the empath, but not at all to compromise their sensitivity or their compassion.
Now, what about the rock? Who's the rock?
Yeah, the rock is the strong, dependable type who is there for you, and you could put this person's name on your emergency contact form in the doctor's office and they'll show up for you. Very positive qualities, but the rock sometimes is more of a giver than a receiver, and they tend to lack a little bit of passion and can be a couch potato. And so the complaint of the mate is always, why doesn't he or she express their emotions more?
So we know who they are.
We do know who they are, and they're a beautiful type, but they need to light a fire inside themselves in terms of their passion a little bit to balance out their great qualities. And then the last type is the gusher. And the gusher is somebody who readily expresses his or her emotions. They feel it, they express it. You pick up the phone, immediately something happens. And this is positive because you don't build up a lot of symptoms. But then on the other hand, you're prone to telling other people your life story and giving them too much information and not going inward to try and solve the problem through your own inner wisdom. Each person has a main emotional type where you revert to it during stress. And this is where you just basically feel more comfortable. You're more comfortable in your head. You're more comfortable empathic. You're more comfortable verbalizing. But what I'm stressing is that we need to really incorporate all the positive points from all the types into who we are as we grow. Because as we age and as time goes on, we continue to grow and get lighter and better and more heart-centered and more emotionally fit. And that's the point of learning and growing. And what happens, and it has a very strong effect on the aging process, instead of getting furrowed and posture cowered over and tense, you become lighter and younger and more resilient as the years go on. And this is a great strength of emotional freedom, is learning some of these techniques will help you to age in a much different way than the traditional way.
I think many people who talk about emotions, they deal with themselves, they deal with their family members, people they're in relationship with. But what really came through for me when I read your book was the landscape of the emotions and how it will affect you in the workplace. Earlier we talked about jealousy. What if you have someone in your group or in your department or close enough that they can affect what's going on, the simpatico of the group, if you will, who is either jealous of you or envious of you, however that works out. What do you do about that? You know that has nothing to do with you, but that doesn't stop them from, they haven't read your book, they're not attempting to corral it. What do you do when someone is clearly directing this kind of emotion or the results of that kind of emotion at you?
Well, I think there are a couple of factors you have to consider, one of which, are they doing anything destructive or negative to you at work? And if so, you'll need to set kind but firm limits and boundaries, as you can't let that behavior go on. But in terms of their insecurities, if they're jealous and envious, you treat them with respect. You treat them with kindness, and you don't feed into it. But then again, you also set the limits and boundaries on the behavior that's encroaching on your well-being.
And yet you're not responsible for their feelings.
No, you're not. But the way to look at it is to see it as a deficit in them, a weakness. Now, it comes, jealousy and envy comes from insecurity. And so to look at it that way and don't react to it. You know, unless, of course, it's affecting you and your well-being, then you have to take more of an aggressive stance. But just in general, if they're jealous or envious, if they're a friend, if they're a really good friend, you can talk to them about it and say, hey, what's going on? And they can say, yes, you know, I am very envious of you now. And I said, well, just tell me. We can talk about it. But in the workplace, sometimes you don't have that ease with people. But I would not react to it. The more you react to it, the more it will grow.
And, of course, another part right now is that people that we may have known for years in the workplace, and they everything was just fine, now they're under severe stress because of the economic meltdown.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with the work that you're at right now. Has to do with everything outside their lives and what is brought to them now.
Yes.
Now what? That's really been difficult because you don't usually speak at those levels in the workplace.
No, but there's the whole concept of emotional wealth now. You know, emotional wealth is how you're dealing with all this, and the gratitude and the love that you have inside of yourself for your family, for your friends, for your coworkers, and your ability to shift from the negative into what you have to be grateful for. You know, I love the concept of emotional wealth and what we can accumulate inside. And for loved ones and coworkers who are going through this, we must support one another. This is a time of collaboration. And if you have a coworker and you're going out to lunch, don't go out to an expensive place. Go and pack a bag lunch and go have a beautiful picnic in the sunshine. You know, just really be sensitive to other people's needs. It's a new kind of sensitivity, and it's really a sign of respect for our coworkers and our loved ones that we can kind of go with the flow of the economic times and be sensitive to everyone's needs without making too big a deal out of it, because a lot of people get ashamed. You know, if they, you know, don't have a lot of money now and they can't afford something, you don't want to go there. You just want to work with what you've got and show a lot of respect to where people are at and where you're at.
And you don't have to know all the details to know that they're suffering.
No. But what people do respond to is incredible support and respect, and just continue being there for them. That's very important. Showing up is so important for someone through the ups and downs. I mean, that's something I value in my life so much, that no matter what I'm going through, my friends who have showed up through hard times, through happy times, you know, this is very meaningful to me.
Now, you've been on many book tours in your life, but this book tour, with this book, in this economic time, it's got to be different.
It is totally different. It took me 4 years to write this book, so you never know when a book will come out. But I started my book tour in the midst of this economic and emotional meltdown, and it has been the greatest honor to travel around the country, going from city to city, helping people not get taken off by fear or anxiety, and to be able to find, you know, a strong place in themselves to be able to deal with anything. That's what emotional freedom, the theme of the book, is about, and how to learn strategies to survive anything, not just this, but anything. We're going to get through this, but other things will come up in your life. And so this is a good practice ground to see people can develop courage now, and there's a chapter on how to be brave, how to develop courage, what we can do, very concrete things. We want to know this. We need to have these skills so we can go on in our life and have those skills, and then you could feel very confident about who you are emotionally and become freer and freer.
Judith, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in. We'll come back. See us anytime.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be on your show.
My guest today is Dr. Judith Orloff. Her latest book is Emotional Freedom: Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life. More information about this interview is available at www.technation.com. For TechNation, I'm Moira Gunn.
You've been listening to the Gigavox Media podcast edition of Tech Nation with Dr. Moira Gunn. Most editions of Tech Nation are recorded at the studios of KQED-FM in San Francisco. Tech Nation is also available on over 200 public radio stations throughout the United States, as well as Armed Forces Radio. Please check your local listings for time and availability. The post-production audio engineer for this program was Paul Figiani. My name is Doug Kay, and I hope you'll join me next time for another edition of Tech Nation here on the Conversations Network.